29th July, with Sangjun, Jonathan, Eric, Bruce, Robert, Sarah, Amra, Roxanne, and others.
If you try to meditate, then you don't understand reality which appears. And that is not the way.
Will there be the chance to see reality while meditating?
No, it's not the matter of seeing, it's the matter of understanding. Yeah. Now reality appears, it doesn't mean that you don't see. You see, but there is no understanding about seeing.
And how about during the meditation?
What are you doing? concentrating on an object with attachment. Yeah.
And then
you like it.
I know that I like it, and then I know the feeling that it's a pleasant feeling. Yes.
So it's still
I
you who knows who wants such pleasant feeling that you thought that it's so nice to have.
Yes, but not meditating.
Why people cling to meditation all the time. They just want pleasant feeling.
Yes,
just pleasant feeling. That's why feeling is vedana khanda. One of the khanda, the very important one.
Yes. And I have tosa or unpleasant feeling if I don't meditate. I know that lopa and tosa.
But you know that even you don't meditate, tosa arises and falls away. Nothing can stay. This should be known directly, that it arises and it falls away.
But for me, it lasts so long.
No development. Yes. But it takes time to develop the understanding, to see that there is no you.
I was asking about the reason, because one can meditate for, I suppose there are several reasons, but basically it would be either one is attached to the experience of meditating, or one is afraid of the consequences of not meditating, or one has dosa about the consequences of not meditating. Or thirdly, one holds an idea that meditation is the practice. In other words, you think that by meditating you are developing more understanding.
All are correct. And that's the fourth reason, because the other school taught me that if I can attain tranquility, I can radiate loving kindness and ask for pardon, forgiveness for people in the past whom I have done something bad to them. So I still have lots of avijja.
But you are someone who has studied the teachings. Have you found that in the teachings at all? You studied Abhidhamma, I think, have you?
Yes, yes.
Any reference in the Abhidhamma to this?
I didn't read the book, but I listened to the preaching.
So what you say is, I think when you notice there's strong attachment or dosa, then it's painful and you want to meditate to reduce that.
To relax for a while. Before I face the reality again.
Right.
Tosa and lopa and
the ignorance.
And what about the kusala ones?
The kusala one,
you cling again.
I cling again. The kusala one. Yes.
Cling to kusala.
Right.
What are the conditions for the arising of sati?
Without any understanding about reality at all, can there be conditions for the arising of awareness?
Not to my understanding.
Whose understanding, if it's not your?
I'm not sure I understand the question.
So now everyone agrees that without the understanding of reality which appears, there would be no conditions for the arising of awareness, right?
I think if I heard you correctly, yes, then I would agree.
Is there a reality right now?
Yes.
Without the understanding about reality, can there be a moment of being aware?
No, there can't.
So what is the conditions for awareness to arise?
Right understanding. But we can't control the arising of right understanding. right understanding is also a conditioned reality,
mm-hmm.
and its arising cannot be controlled.
Right. Yeah.
But I meditate too.
But can't we study right view and wrong view and learn to discern between them, and in that way provide the conditions for right understanding?
We can't provide the conditions.
Well, not we as in being a driver behind there, but in terms of studying the Dhamma, meditating on the Dhamma, is it or is it not possible to study right view and wrong view and to learn what wrong view is and learn what right view is?
It's possible to study.
And as a result of that, provide favorable conditions for the arising of
sati. We can't provide favorable conditions for sati. We can't provide conditions. Conditions arise because of previous conditions, that's all.
What about volition?
A volition arises because of previous conditions. Volition is a cetasika that arises because of previous conditions.
Can we say we have choice conventionally?
We have choice conventionally, sure.
So can we choose to study the Dhamma or choose to not study the Dhamma?
It depends on conditions. I think it sounds deterministic, and I'm fighting with this idea that this method of studying realities seems deterministic, but there is volition. Volition arises. Volition is a cetasika. Cetasika are compounded realities. We can't control the arising of compounded realities.
What about the Bodhipakkhiya Dhammas? What are the four Samapadana?
I would like to talk about the 87 Bodhipakkhiya Dhamma.
Specifically the four Samapadana and how right effort is involved with the four Samapadana.
Yeah. Okay. Without right understanding of reality, can there be any Viriya Cetasika which perform the four function of Samapatthana?
And more specifically asking about the role of right effort, okay, Samavayama, right effort, and how that ties back into the four Samapadana, okay?
Yeah. All the right path must follow the right understanding, the first path. If there is no right understanding, there cannot be right Sammasankappa, right Samavayama, right Samadhi at all. And they arise together, five of them, not eight yet. Because whenever there is Samma Sati, at that moment there is Samma Vayama, automatically. There is no one who's trying to do anything at that moment, because awareness is aware. For example, right now, there are realities arising and falling away. So it depends on right awareness, which comes from right understanding, just to be aware of the one which is conditioned, arising, appearing right now, because that one falls away in split seconds. So we don't mind which one, because instead of thinking about being aware of something in the future, what about reality right now? Without right understanding, one overlooks and then try to find and try to understand the one which one tries to make it arise or condition it to appear. While now we don't have to do anything because Samma Vayama arises with Samma Sati and Samma Titti and Samma Sankappa. No one can do anything. No one can try to do something different from just studying.
Assuming that one can try to do something, is that Michaditi?
Right. Because Jetana is not included in the Eightfold Path at all. And even right now, there is Jetana arising all the time, without any guide. No one guides Jetana, but one takes Jetana from me, who guides.
I would just have to say, going back to the suttas, not talking about the Abhidhamma at the moment, the Buddha spoke, and I can't remember the specific sutta, but it's in the Samyutta Nikaya from my recollection, where the Buddha said, if there were not the opportunity to choose a right action, I would not be teaching right effort and so forth. If there were no cause and result, I wouldn't be teaching a way out of suffering and so forth. The way I'm looking at this is that Buddha very explicitly taught in Samapadana the four things. So why would the Buddha teach that? Why would the Buddha teach abandoning unskillful qualities and taking up skillful qualities if there's no notion of volition or effort or any of that kind of stuff involved with it? It makes no sense to me to talk about citta and cetasika when we have basic issues dealing with basic unwholesomeness that has to be dealt with and then wholesomeness that needs to be accumulated.
Now there is listening. Is there any samavayama? Is there right effort at this moment?
I have to back up to ask a more basic question. Why are we even talking about Paramattha Dhammas in the first place? Why?
We hear a lot about Dhamma. Do we really understand Dhamma or just the word Dhamma? Because anyone who says that he understands Dhamma knows that Dhamma is Paramattha Dhamma. Paramattha Dhamma is Abhidhamma, the same thing, no difference. No matter it is in the Vinaya or Suttanta or Abhidhamma, Dhamma is Dhamma. So one who knows Dhamma knows that Dhamma is anatta. Dhamma is real and Dhamma is Paramattha Dhamma, the same thing. For the person who thinks that, who knows, who reads about Dhamma, but he doesn't like or doesn't know anything about Abhidhamma, do we know that that person really knows what Dhamma is? Because if the person really understands Dhamma, he knows that what is Dhamma right now, and Dhamma right now must be Paramattha Dhamma and must be Abhidhamma. We don't have to separate by Vinaya or Suttanta or Abhidhamma at all.
And remember, in the Athasalini, there's a warning that people who study the suttas, the sutta reciters, they can come to wrong view. The ones who don't study the Abhidhamma, they can come to wrong view because they read about people and beings. The Buddha talked in conventional language, so they can come to wrong view and think there is a being there. It's a sort of a warning.
There are warnings that come from other schools that say that even studying the Abhidhamma is perhaps one of the most dangerous things of all because of the degree of conceptualization involved with understanding the various categories and so forth. That's not what's happening here, obviously, because of the emphasis on Paramattha Dhammas, but I wanted to get to the very most basic and essential question. Why are we studying the Dhamma in the first place? Why? And I would be very interested to hear Khun Sujin's response. Why study the Dhamma at all? Why? Why not just go out and party and have fun?
There is Dhamma right now, so shouldn't we study? Or should we study something, some other subject? Because now there is Dhamma for studying.
But why study Dhamma? Why
to
not
understand, just... to have understanding of reality of Dhamma. I think that people just don't want to know or hear and think that there is understanding about Dhamma without understanding reality, which is Dhamma right now.
Can I just interject real quickly? Khun Sujin, when you say studying Dhamma, you mean studying reality.
Right.
That's all. Right. And if you interchange the word Dhamma for reality and reality for Dhamma, that's it. There's nothing now but Dhamma.
Excuse me, shall we come back to the first stage or first step? That we study Dhamma in order to get rid of dukkha, is that right? If we don't know what dukkha is, can we get rid of dukkha? So there must be the understanding of what is dukkha, so that we know that there can be the way to get rid of it, of that dukkha. So what dukkha that we should get rid of? What kind of dukkha? Otherwise, it's like having the idea that I want to get rid of dukkha, but I don't know what dukkha is. So how can one get rid of dukkha? That's why the study has to go stage by stage, carefully and very subtle too. For example, dukkha here at this moment. Does anyone have dukkha? Would you like to get rid of that dukkha? So what's the way to get rid of that dukkha?
Wisdom. Panya that realizes emptiness.
Not at will, right?
Well, again, I thought we've all agreed on that there's no driver, so hopefully we can put that to bed and not bring that up again.
Yeah, I'm afraid we're going to bring it up again because it's not emptiness. The realities are there, they're not empty.
Dukkha is real enough.
And what is not enough?
Real enough means to me that if I stub my toe, I experience suffering.
If there isn't any understanding now of reality, of seeing or visible object, how can there possibly be any understanding of the impermanence or the unsatisfactoriness of seeing or visible object? So is one really concerned to get rid of seeing or visible object, or what does one mean by dukkha at that time? One talks about getting rid of it. Because if one says, oh, well, if one goes out and has a great time with one's friends, that's lobha. But this is just a story. It's not
right.
Understanding about
right.
The reality
right.
At this
right.
Moment.
Completely different question. Can one try to develop sila? Can one try to keep sila?
What level of sila? Because there are many levels of sila as well.
I don't understand sila in terms of levels. Could you explain that?
The very low level is the five sila, right? And more than that is the bhikkhu sila. But what about the higher or more subtle sila? Because before can be the moment of abstaining from ill deeds, there must be the moment of akusala citta arising before there can be any move of deeds. So if there is the awareness and understanding of the akusala citta. At that moment, it is adisila or indriya sangvara sila. It's higher than just follow the rules, because one can really see the danger of akusala with awareness. Otherwise, it's impossible to follow the teachings or the rules as sila.
Kun Sujin, would you please maybe describe if you think sila is prescriptive, meaning as a prescription to follow, or is it something that describes some nature?
I think that when Buddha taught us to understand Dhamma, he taught us to understand this very moment, the reality first. Otherwise, we'll think about the story of the citta and cetasi and rupa without understanding the nature of Dhamma right now. But when one has the understanding of the nature of reality right now, one can understand better and better and better about the details, about the subtlety of the realities. So that's all in the Tipitaka. It doesn't mean that we read and we try to find the ayatana or the tattoo elsewhere, but it's now at this moment. But before understanding by way of ayatana or tattoo, there must be the intellectual understanding by hearing and considering. At that moment, it's much better than just the dana and sila, because it's the development of understanding reality. At that moment, there can be conditions for the arising of right awareness, when there's enough right understanding about realities. So there are realities. Even when one is reading sutta, it seems like Buddha taught us to do this or that, right? It seems we interpret that way because we think that way, that there is someone, it's me, who should follow the teachings. But in reality, he just showed us the cause and the effect and the characteristic of all dhammas. What condition what? For example, when you talk about paticca-samuppada, what about avicca? In order to understand avicca, it doesn't mean that we have to follow pages of books here and there and try to understand it. But is there avicca right now? Because by way of paticca-samuppada, it deals about the past cause and present result and present cause for future result, right? So when we talk about avicca, we don't have to think of the origination, when and where, but at this very moment.
Sorry, the origination of avidya or?
Avicca, okay. Yeah. But you see that this life is past life of next life. So we can understand avicca right now, because whenever there is seeing and there is avicca, it conditions the next life, because there's the avicca which conditions the deeds, kusala kamma or kusala kamma, punya pisangka, apunya pisangka, and anicca pisangkara. So the studying of Dhamma means that right now, when one can understand reality, one can even understand paticca-samuppada too. So anything can be understood right now, even the dukkha, because it's not easy to see or realize the nature of dukkha in the absolute sense. Because in the sutta, monk was asked why he followed the teachings of the Buddha. That monk would answer that just for seeing the dukkha, developing the path to see the dukkha. Because dukkha is not easy to realize at all. We can talk about dukkha, the arising and falling away of reality of this moment, but it's not the direct experience of anyone yet. So how can there be the moment of really realize the arising and falling away of each one or each kind or any moment? That's why they should be studying from right the moment right now, and it fits in all the teachings, no matter in Vinaya, Suttanta, and Abhidhamma.
So to understand dukkha, not to get rid of dukkha.
First.
If we don't actually see the dukkha of the present moment, even though we understand intellectually why it must be so, then the first task is to understand the dukkha, not to get rid of it,